Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Anatomy of Movie. Jason Bourne returns to the big screen, and we're here to talk about it all the way from story, action, writing, cinematography, editing, and all that. So stay tuned on Anatomy of Movie.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right. We're back in our extreme ways with Marissa Serafini. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
And we have John Comerford.
Yes.
And I'm Phil Svitek. Thanks, John.
Sounds good.
Welcome. For those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome. If we include our rundown for you in the description so that way you can follow along and see all of our various notes. It is very spoiler-filled, so we assume that you've seen the movie. But, you know, if you want to be spoiled anyway, we'll spoil away.
That's right. Get ready. So be prepared.
Be warned. Because knowing's half the battle, as Jason Bourne finds out. Overall impressions of Jason Bourne, the fifth movie in this franchise, the fourth with Matt Damon.
Well, I was very excited to see this film. Mm-hmm. I had high expectations because the first three, you know, with Matt Damon were really well done. And then even, you know, Bourne Legacy without him. Mm-hmm. And we had Jeremy Renner. I thought was a really good standalone film, too. Yeah. So I was really excited to see this. It did not exceed my expectations. And, I mean, it was good at some parts. And it was very lackadaisical at others. Yeah. But other than that, it was all right for me.
Well, I'm a big fan of the movies as well. I've seen all four. And I've seen, I think the first three I've seen, I'd say about 15 times. Not each, just overall. And I liked Legacy as well. I thought that was really good. So I had high expectations too. I really was looking forward to this because I'm a big fan. And it didn't meet mine either. But I liked the film. I didn't love the film. Of all the Bourne films, I'm guessing this would be my least favorite. But that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy parts of it. There are others I was just cringing at going, what are we doing here? But I'm it's one of those things where I'm really happy they made it because it was nice to see it come back. And for many of the reasons where I liked the original three, I also like this one. And there you go. What did you think?
I enjoyed it overall. And I like the fact that we live in a post-Snowden world, mm-hmm. in this, and kind of tying it to that. And, you know, for those of you that know me very well, I love the British TV show The Prisoner. And in some sort of way, this is kind of... This is an extension of that. Like, this is the best kind of version that you can have that isn't like what the British version was, just so weird and heady, that this is a fun version of that to me. For those of you who have never seen The Prisoner, I have no idea what to talk about. No one get the reference. But nonetheless, I enjoyed
it. Worth the watch.
Every one of these movies sort of has the same beats.
Yeah, a lot of people call this the Bourne redundancy.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know. Like, it's just fun in that way that it can continue to do it. And I don't care. It's done in such an interesting way. And even when... there's a song we opened up with, Extreme Ways, hits always at the end. It's just a great trope, and I don't know. It just always works, at least for me. So I'm a fan. I'm in.
Well, one of the things I thought was really interesting is when Matt Damon did an interview, he was talking about after he did The Ultimatum, he wasn't sure if they'd ever come back because he figured that character had fulfilled his internal drive, which is to find out who he is, what he's done, memory, and all that other stuff, and he'd already done that. So what could they possibly bring him back with? Because there was
but the tagline was the best, you know, and I don't know when they came up with this, but the whole idea of, like, just because you remember doesn't mean you know everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, we're good.
But, you know, what was fascinating was the whole idea that his father was involved and that he created or helped create Treadstone or whatever it was. And then it was like, oh, my God. And then, you know, that his own people killed his dad either to motivate him to be part of it or to mm-hmm. because his father was really going to spill the beans about the whole thing, whatever. I thought that was great character stuff. But I really wanted to know more. I wanted to know, how that was going to affect Bourne enough. And they opened that can of worms, and I was hoping that they would dive into that a little bit more than they did. And I would have appreciated it if they had.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. they had to get set up to a story that felt like wasn't fully complete. And I don't know if that was on purpose in order to maybe make a sequel to this one or like another one and continue it. And Jason Bourne, because, you know, you had that ending question.
Yeah,
like,
they certainly left it open.
Are you back? Or like, are you still with us and whatnot? And he's like, you know, let me get back to you and I'll find you.
Yeah. I think the answer is no.
Well, he's not coming back to them.
But that's also
them,
the thing. They left it very open-ended. And that was definitely on purpose. And it bothered me because it felt like it wasn't complete, and I wanted more.
Yeah, because how many times was Bourne said, this ends tonight?
Yes.
And it never ends.
Well, every movie says
that.
I know. And that's...
I know. At the end, you know, it was a little bit milquetoast in terms of how it ended. I do like the fact that she's not getting away with anything. He knows exactly who she is and what she's about. That was great. And I also like that they left it open that he might come back, because I would like to, you know, it's like, why doesn't he put this thing to rest for real? I mean, because he probably could. But I kind of like that. That part of it anyway, just that they left it open, because I would like to see Bourne and Renner's character, Alan, what's his name? I
can't remember. Cross.
Thank you.
Well, I think they are.
Is it Alex or Alan? Alex Cross is a different character.
Aaron Cross.
Thank you.
A name.
He's not going to be, he's not in this one, but he will be in the sequel in 2018. So that's already slated.
Oh, they put him in? Okay, I didn't know that. I just knew that Renner was
according to some reports.
That would be nice. Because I would like to see those guys get together. I think that would be interesting. Especially if they were against
those
each other in the beginning.
Pass.
That might be kind of fun.
Well, let's take a step back, too, because I know you guys saw Bourne Legacy, but even, you know, you mentioned it, John. Matt Damon was kind of unwilling to go on another one, but he did say if Paul Greengrass came up with something. And ironically, he stated, like, you know, maybe in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. I know. That's not great.
It's 10 years. So it kind of worked out that way. And before we fully dive into this one, I want to talk about Bourne Legacy, because it's a nice tie-in between the original three and this one. And whatnot with Aaron Cross. So what did you guys like about that one and how it tied?
I really liked the way they expanded the program. What Treadstone, Blackbriar, whatever your version of it they want to use. What they did in it, how they affected the guys, what they were trying to achieve, I thought that was fascinating stuff. I mean, the idea that people are being viraled into having to enhance their capabilities, etc. I thought that was fascinating, and I thought they handled that well. I just really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and also the same cops up, viraling off because programs were being shut down and whatnot. I liked the fact that it was a different perspective.
Yeah,
even though it was from the same Treadstone, but how it affected other people other than Jason Bourne. Because during the Jason Bourne films, the trilogy, we didn't really see him take any medication and whatnot. And then we learned about these pills. So it was like, oh, this is how they're so smart and have all these skills that they acquired.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating.
And I think it was a really good build-up of the backstory of just the program itself.
It really deepened
made us understand why they are and how they do the things that they do. Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, and in this one, Paul Greengrass wrote it along with Christopher Rouse, who's also the editor of all things.
Which is
interesting. I mean, he's a producer too, but and this was the first Bourne movie not with Tony Gilroy writing, so it was interesting. And
could you see that? Because I don't know that I could necessarily tell, but one of the things that I appreciate about Tony's is that, for instance, I think Tony would have investigated the father angle a little bit longer. I think he would have, put more grist in that mill for there and put that on the screen. I think he would have. I don't know that's true, but that would be my guess.
Yeah,
I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I don't know exactly, like, unlike Quentin Tarantino, I don't know necessarily what defines Tony Gilroy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can only judge him on what ends up on screen.
Right.
In those movies, so it's a tougher call to make than most. But, it would have been interesting. I also did read CinemaSins, a very popular YouTube channel, apparently wrote an open letter to Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon about what they thought that the movie should be. So if you ever want to check that out, it's kind of funny.
There are some passionate fans out there.
Yes, indeed. But let's dive into this one. Just kind of... What did you guys think in terms of a blend of action and story overall?
You know, the trilogy, actually the four of them, they've done a really good job of blending action and story and stuff like that. They've always been great at that. This one did, for me, the balance was off. I thought we were, especially in the Greece set piece, we were in Greece for God knows how long. It felt like we were twice as long as we needed to be, in my estimation. And it didn't really propel anything for me. And I remember watching it and going, why are we still here? What are they doing? Why is it taking so long to do this? It just drove me crazy.
Well, I agree with you. If they literally cut out like two turns, meaning like when the assets are chasing them in the car,
right.
If you cut out like two streets worth and then whatever, then you could have definitely done that.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I was telling John before we went live is that also I felt the pacing was off of this film because you had your good action scene at the beginning and then at the end, and literally all the whole middle part of the movie is watching Jason Bourne walk from point A to point B each city.
But every one of the movies, if you notice, there was a lot of those shots, but I do agree that there were too many.
But even in like the earlier movies, we see him walking the streets and whatnot, but it's so calculated. He's like, I'm going to move left at this time. I'm gonna take out these three people. There's always momentum and kinetic energy while we're watching him. And then even when we're watching the sniper take out team Alpha A and B, it just kept feeling like we're watching someone literally walk from one end of the room to the next. I'm like, I don't need to watch this in real time.
To me that was fun, because I don't know, I would have preferred they cut down Grease maybe a little bit, and I love that stuff. And the fact that all he has, you know, his whole technique is head down.
Head down, hat,
and it's everyone's always technique.
It's amazing.
Because it is sort of, I also look at it from the perspective of whether the asset or, Tommy Lee's character of like, okay, well, he's right there.
I know,
but we can't get him.
I know. And it never, in any of these Bourne movies, you know, Marie, they change hair color and all that. Bourne never changes hair, never changes hairstyle. He doesn't have a beard, doesn't have a mustache, not glasses, nothing, just only a hat.
Although he did
get amazing.
Ripped.
That's it.
He did get ripped. Well, 10 years of, extreme fighting or MMA or whatever is going to probably do that to you.
I guess.
Street fighting.
Street fighting, exactly.
I did feel like...
Look weathered. Didn't you like the 10 years? I mean, it looked like that was a hard 10 years, man.
He definitely looked like he was, holding back and hiding out and being, he had a living a more gruff lifestyle.
Punishing himself as well as others for his sins. I mean, it was, I liked how they started him out. I mean, he looked haunted. He looked messed up.
Yeah, and he couldn't go back to the U.S. Like, he just had to stay off the grid.
Just running,
All cash transactions.
Yeah, never staying in the same place twice.
One of the things I like about Bourne is that he is able to think really fast and whatnot. Yeah. And we sort of got that, but to me, perhaps not as much as in the past ones. At the end when he foils Heather Lee, that was a moment of like, he is smart and he's capable. But the rest of it, I felt like relied too much, a little bit on action. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can agree with that, especially this one. In the other movies, you can see him thinking, and that's kind of – Damon has a way of being able to put that on screen. And for me anyway, as I'm watching him, you can see him thinking, and that's kind of interesting. That's compelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, the earlier films – Jason Bourne always has a female companion with him, usually that he's trying to calculate to save the woman and save himself at the same time. He's playing like two different chess games. And then this one, I felt like it was just himself, and we didn't really get that internal external monologue when he's telling someone else like, walk this way for so long.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, when he was doing that with Patty Considine and.
Yeah, like he always had a female companion to actually explain to the audience what his moves were.
Yeah, and I think too, like one example. So when they're in Greece, I was thinking about it. Remember how he takes the bottle and smashes it, and that creates the fire.
Yeah,
it would have been cool to. It's just like he knew that was there, and maybe does. But I would have liked to see like even just a split second of like. Calculating.
Yeah, no.
What am I
going to
do?
I agree.
Oh,
that's
guy's
more
got
interesting.
This.
Yeah,
boom.
Exactly.
Toss it. Done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it would have been kind of cool to see visually to see that. Mm-hmm. What I found interesting, he says only 45 lines, a total of 288 words.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, does it, oh, I guess maybe.
And I would, talk it's that interesting because I would like to go back, not that I'm going to do this, but it would, I wish somebody else would do it. How many lines did he have in the other ones? Because as I'm watching this, I was actually going, wow, he's really not saying anything.
Yeah. He keeps saying it ends tonight. That's yeah, three.
Exactly.
I think it's a lot more action that compensated yeah, for his mm-hmm, dialogue.
Well, Marissa, you have Matt Damon's training regimen. Mm. Why don't you speak to that?
Yeah, I found this very interesting. His physical trainer, Jason Walsh, because when Matt was filming this, he was in between like 2 to 3 other films. Mm-hmm. There's the one about the Great Wall of China
right,
as well. And but during the training regimen and whatnot, his physical trainer, Jason Walsh, and Matt, they would get up early in the morning and they would do like grueling running along the Great Wall, which is in the Gobi Desert. And, you know, that's high altitude, mm-hmm, really long pace for like 6 miles. Jeez. Early in the morning. And so the breathing's off. And then other places, when they were in the Canary Islands, they would run in the mountains, which is, again, also high altitude. So mm-hmm, and a high, like, 10-grade oh incline, which is, like, grueling, just physically grueling. So, like, breathing was difficult for them, plus physically, it was mm-hmm, just, it hurts. So he definitely put his body through a lot of physical exertion mm-hmm, during training, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I thought, you know, and he it showed.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's yeah, having like between him and Ben Affleck, if they're having like a muscle war or something, yeah, but
yeah. And he's widely been known to say that getting in shape this time was very difficult. No, well, I should say much more difficult than, you know, 15 years ago.
But even yeah, I don't remember him being that buff.
No, he would never yeah, really was.
You know, but, again, because he used a little bit more brain than necessarily mm-hmm, just muscle. Yeah. And this one, yeah, mm-hmm, you just saw from the when he takes off his shirt, like, oh wow,
he's thick, he's yeah, solid. Yeah,
and in the earlier films, he was a lot skinnier too. Yeah. So
yeah, especially the
definitely
first
packed
film,
on I mean, muscle.
Really looked young.
I mean, when they showed his file and there's yeah, young Matt Damon,
you're going, what? Oh yeah, exactly.
You know, he's like a teenager. That's a good one. The hunting days.
Yeah, seriously.
So absolutely.
Far cry from Courage Under Fire when he made that emaciated enemy.
Indeed. The foil, obviously, this time around is Robert Dewey.
Yes.
Tommy Lee Jones. Mm-hmm. What do we? But yeah, I thought he was fun to watch. Yeah.
Grizzled, aged veteran.
I'm trying to remember what he did because he was only in about 2 scenes.
Two scenes?
Yeah.
What movie did you watch?
I don't really remember him doing much.
It was immemorable.
Much.
Or it was not memorable.
I remember when Heather Lee, you know, she's pitching, why don't we bring Jason Bourne in? And, you know, at that point, mm-hmm, at least I had figured it out of, like, why he doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
And he's like, sounds like a plan to me! Yeah. Just it was just like you could clearly see the disdain of him just being like, well, I just want this woman to stop meddling.
Mm-hmm. I remember being disappointed because I was like, Tommy Lee Jones is such a great actor, mm-hmm, and this character was so not memorable to me. And not as, I mean, if you're going to compare like this type of leadership role compared to Joan Allen's character in the mm-hmm, first three, I think yeah, she was way more memorable and always constantly challenged him throughout mm-hmm, these films. And I don't feel like Dewey did that.
Well, I mean, part of it is you have to kind of look at, to me, the one flaw was the dream, deep dream.
No, yeah.
Right. Sure. And they were smart enough to like not actually go in detail about how Deep Dream as a platform worked, because it would have been like, what the hell is this lame thing? So the less you can kind of go towards mm-hmm, that, but just know that it's important. Mm-hmm. I did like the idea
put all
of
us
it.
To sleep.
I did like the idea of it because obviously privacy and freedom mm-hmm, is just always constantly talked about. But if that was a little bit more fleshed out, I think Deep Dream and Tommy Lee's character could have been a little bit stronger.
Yeah, I was wondering, again, it was like, that's for me where the balance was off, is that we could have taken some time to explore those things and to give us what the heck was going on and how they were going to implement that or something like that, because it would have been interesting.
Yeah, because obviously the whole proposed notion was that Here's this free platform, Deep.
Yeah, and, everybody get on it.
And it's basically, in many ways, becomes like a weird Skynet in the sense that it just monitors everybody and then kills us all.
Yeah, so,
But, you know, to your point, John, I wish, because they had that great talk at whatever it was, the coffee shop, and he's talking about, like, you know, you make my job to keep this place safe extremely difficult. And it would have been great to see a little bit more, although I think Tommy Lee might have had less dialogue than Jason Bourne, too, because his phone calls, like, he never even answered the phone call. Yeah. They just told him, like, hey, Bourne's out there. Hang up. And that was that. Like, okay, I got the information I need. Thanks. What didn't work so well for you, Marissa?
For Dewey?
Yeah, what would have made him memorable?
I think if there was, like, actually scenes where, because Dewey's job was to, like, track Bourne and whatnot, and that was, like, by the use of technology, but I felt like if there was any physical interaction, you know, more so that, like, heightened the intensity, that I think it would have been, like, oh, this is a cat and mouse game, and it didn't really feel like that. Whereas Joan Allen's character always felt like, you know, she was constantly following every move, and she was so close to him so many times.
The other thing that was great about the Pam Landy character is that they had had a lot of other people out to get her or pin things on her, make her the fall person, which I thought was good, because then you knew that she was stuck in there in the middle too. So which was missing for me with the Dewey thing. We didn't know until the end of the movie, that the national was the security, and who was that guy that Heather Lee was talking to in the truck? I can't remember his character name. But that they were hoping to move Dewey or just usurp him or do whatever. But we didn't learn that till later. It would have been nice to know that there was something else out there, because obviously Dewey didn't want...
Well, we knew that, Heather was reading that article that confidence is low in the CIA, and it was like, okay, why? Mm-hmm. But...
Yeah, but it just didn't have the same impact as the Pam Landy thing, just because.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, the other thing that was odd for me, that didn't work for me, is like Heather Lee was, she's what, she wants to take over a spot? You know, is that what the deal was? Or did she just, because she says at the end, there are plenty of bureaus that want what I have. And stuff, but it almost made it look like she was trying to get rid of Dewey so she could step into his shoes. Or something,
right? And
like,
I mean, Alicia Vikander, she's a great upcoming actress and whatnot, and definitely a more notable name than my thing is for this type of character and role that she portrayed. I felt like her age might have been an issue.
It was.
I thought she's young, in her mid-20s, and I felt like a person in that type of position would be way more experienced and a bit older.
Yeah, they were.
And I found it unbelievable that she'd be in that position to help take down these guys.
Especially when you had the Pam Landy thing. I mean, she's extremely capable, sharp, everything like that. And then you turn and, you know.
Aged and experienced.
Yeah. And
well, they try to play with that a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Millennials, they're my people. I can get them on board. And I'm just going, okay.
Alicia Vikander. And, like, I was rooting for her, but I didn't find it believable that that type of person would be in that position.
I didn't find it believable that they would say, okay, fine, you have full operation and control. I just went, what? Are you kidding me?
She's going to run this operation?
Exactly. Because you know who Bourne is. You know what he's capable of. Even Pam Landy couldn't bring him in. So, and you're going to give it to her. And that just seemed weird to me. It didn't seem...
Yeah, I mean,
Would he do that on purpose because Dewey wanted her to fail? Because he needed, you know, obviously that's what he did.
I buy that she was very tech savvy, and that was kind of her jumping off point.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you guys that perhaps she wasn't the right fit in that regard. But in terms of for the Heather Lee, the job for running the CIA.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of age. What was her motive? I mean, in some ways, when I first read the ending scene when she says, you know, well, if he defaults, then, you know, we'll have to bring him down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in some sense, like, was she just saying that just to say that to him? Because that's the answer that he wanted to hear, but she doesn't really mean it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that, I think that's it, exactly. I think she wanted to keep her options open. And say, okay, well, I want to do it this way because he's an asset and I can use him, but I'll let him know that if it doesn't work, I'll put him down. I think she was saying it just for him, and it just, of course, bit her in the butt because Jason heard everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what I think.
So, I mean, I liked her as a character. I just, I didn't understand her.
I was okay. I thought it was, she was okay as a character, but again, it was another thing like, okay, we have to play her close to the vest because we can't know that she's got competing agendas here and she has an ultimate agenda later on that we see. Well, that part's great.
But she played it flat.
I was like, she wasn't.
But the agenda, okay, so that's the question, though. Was it really to just get rid of him and get in that position? Or was it the fact that she just really disagreed with the tactics and the program?
That's why I think it's out of balance. Along with the father issue, I was going, okay, well, what is the deal here? But they gave her more interesting things to play than they gave Damon. Hmm. You know, in terms of her, competing alliances and things like that, and keeping it close to the vest. But I don't have any idea what she was trying to do. Did she like the deep dream thing? Or she just wanted to get rid of? I don't exactly know what her motivation was, because it never became clear. And maybe that's what they want it to be completely gray. You can never trust anybody. You don't know what their agenda is. But for me, it was kind of like, okay, whatever.
Well, you have to kind of look at the real world impact of it, and you're like, what are they saying about Snowden? And then ultimately, we're in election year, so what does it say about how we should trust our own government or not?
Well, and you shouldn't completely. I mean, but because one of the things they made clear is her ambition is everything. I mean, she in a sense, when she saw an opening to get somebody out of the way and her to move forward, that's what she did. So. Which, we want ambitious people doing.
Is that why
things.
The Jeep Dream guy? Because they went to Stanford together. And,
yeah, there was
and,
a whole...
And yeah, that...
there was this competing thing there with him, and it's like, okay.
You could cut the tension in that room.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But none of that was ever made clear. And I thought if they had made those things clear, it would have been much more intrigue to this. We would have, would have had the depth that we were looking for. And it would have made the whole thing more, rather than it wouldn't have made it convoluted, it would have made it just make it complex, which is good. I like, a complex intrigue spy thing with action.
I do too.
I like this.
Well, because we kind of talked about the ending already, but, when Bourne sees that she says this line and whatnot, does he take it as that she's a liar, or again, that to me is she's just saying what she needs to say at the time that she needs to say it to people she needs to say it to?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, because I think because of the position that she's in, she kind of has to say things to placate to people and have them to hear what they want. Also, it might have been a power play, but with her character, I don't think she fully meant it. She can say it, but not actually go through with it. Therefore, I think she
would have gone through it. If it led to her advantage and, got her a gain, she would do it.
But then, so let's assume that, she didn't mean it, right? Mm-hmm. What was Jason Bourne looking for? Was he looking is he looking for someone that can actually stand up to the establishment so that way change can happen? Because that's what she pitches him on. But the fact that she says, whether or not she means it, it's like, okay, well, you're not that strong enough to actually enact change.
I don't know. I don't know. I think more than anything, he was just trying to say, I got your number, lady.
Yes, exactly. I think it was the message that, I know how to reach you and I can track you down whenever I want. Number,
but I don't. What's that?
Nothing.
I bet you do.
There you go. It's just to say that you think you can, pull me into this. Forget it. Not going to happen.
Like, I'll reach you.
If I do this, it's on my terms, not on yours.
Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because, again, it kind of what's nice about it, she says, any agency would love to have me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, he basically trumps her of, I'm more in demand than you are, lady.
True.
So
yeah,
I thought that the casting of her was kind of strange. And, then there, I didn't exactly know what accent she was playing, if it was supposed to be an American one or a mixed one. I don't know.
I think it might have been
confusing and distracting.
Transferring of... Mm-hmm. Nikki to a new woman to gain interest in her character.
She got early retirement.
Let's talk about Nikki. Poor Julia Stiles. Yeah.
It's a permanent retirement.
Hollywood's brutal. You got to get the young one in there. And how old is she?
It's
how old
terrible.
Is Julia?
I mean, she's not even 40.
Yeah, she's in the 30s. 35,
man. Whatever the hell she is, 33.
Yeah. So that's that's not old at all.
I personally didn't mind that. I knew if Nikki was going to show up, I go, she's got to get killed. She's got to get killed. Because, you know, that's almost the formula. You got to kill.
I remember thinking to myself, I was like, wow, Nikki's still around. Mm-hmm. It's been four movies and she's still here.
I thought it was great that, you know, she was going to, you know, out them and all that other stuff. That part was great. But the thing that was kind of odd to me is that she's not in disguise and she's back to being who she always was. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. You know, somebody who's been under the, you know, I guess if you're been on the grid for that off the grid for that long, you think you can just go back to the way you always looked. I don't know, that seemed weird. And then,
to be fair, they were in a different country as well.
True, so. But you know, I would think that you would just change your look and keep it changed. Whatever, doesn't matter.
Also, to a power surger.
Yeah,
like the fact that they took. Like, don't you have any generators or anything like that?
Exactly. They didn't kick online. And the other thing that was strange is, okay, they've been looking for a Bourne, or at least he's been out, and you know, the CIA with all their technical abilities can't find him. She just shows up in Greece and there she knows exactly where he is. It's like, how the hell does she know that?
Well, I think those two always had a connection. It's kind of like...
Yeah, but I mean, they established that, you know, I don't think Bourne would tell her, okay, if you ever need me, here's where I'll be, or here's how you can get in touch with me, because he says, you know, off the grid, you know, none of this, you know. It just seemed a little bit convenient that she just shows up in a place where how many people would know that that fight's going to happen then, there, and he's going to be there. That seemed... very convenient.
She also traveled fast. Like, you know, the briefing happens like an hour after.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, all right, she's on her way to here, all on the way to Athens. Yeah. Like, whoa, that's a fast plane, then train.
She's got to have tabs on him. I'm going, he's not going to leave tabs on him.
Yeah.
The whole point is that people can't find him. I thought that was weird. But I didn't have any problem with her getting killed.
Find the informant and find Jason Bourne. Mm-hmm. It sucked the way she went, though. I'm like, poor girl. Because she was literally, like, writhing in pain. Like,
man, when she hit the wall, that was like,
Private Ryan
damn.
Style. No, poor girl, help her.
Well, Julia says that she has, in terms of Nikki, she has nothing to lose at this point. She's been running for her life. She gets to be quite tough. I'm really proud of that part of an action movie franchise that's so current and relevant and set in a world that we recognize. Mm. So, and she goes on to say, I have nothing to hide.
And she still went down helping Jason Bourne. Yeah, she sacrificed herself to give him the info.
Yep. Helped him, but then she died.
Is anybody bothered by? I didn't have any problem with being killed. I thought it was, you know, that's in keeping with the franchise, and you know that's what they always do.
I mean, it was sad. I would have let you know, because in some sense, obviously, you know, you kind of know that Jason Bourne is going to continue this mission and do what she had wanted, but. You know, they kind of they have fighting ideologies. Yeah. You know, especially initially, she's like, "I don't believe that, neither do you."
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I was very upset that Nikki died too because she lasted so long and always helped him. But like, I like the fact that she went down still helping him and she was still loyal, even though they clashed on some certain points. But like, she still helped him to her last moment.
I was disappointed.
Fulfilled her character.
Yeah, I did want to see Pam in it though.
Same here.
I was trying to figure out how they could have worked her in. Like, I thought that would have been nice because I thought she was a great character. I thought they did a good job.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, a new character that we did get was the asset.
Yes.
Vincent Cassell. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think? I mean, very.
Well, he's I enjoy him. I like him in his movies. I mean,
he likes playing the bad guy.
Yeah, usually. Yeah. And he does a good job. I mean, he's.
He was just so good at. Just being so maniacal and the two-way, like, he's communicating with Heather and she's like, what's going on? Yeah. Where's your tracker? Let him do his job!
I don't think they needed backstory for his character. I mean, it's good that they tried to establish something, but I didn't need a link between a sniper trying to take out his target but having a personal motivation behind it.
Yeah,
I mean, when he was killing Team Alpha A and B, I'm like, okay, why is he doing this? But I don't think he needed a personal connection to Jason Bourne to take him out.
Well, the personal connection, I didn't quite understand it initially, but then when it's the full reveal that it was him that took out the father, and to your point, had we had a little bit more on the father's motive, then that could have taken on a bigger impact. But that it wasn't just that he was upset with Jason Bourne, they have a whole history.
Yeah, no, it's not just, okay, I have an asset trying to kill me, like, for instance, in Supremacy or even whatever. No, you're trying to kill me. You killed my dad, so I got some ass.
Not real pissed.
So I did like that aspect of it. I thought they did really well with that.
And so the question I had was, do you think that they killed his dad for the reason they said? Because Tommy was saying that he was going to out them, or somebody said it was not Tommy, but Dewey's character, mm-hmm. Tommy's character, Dewey. Did they kill his dad because he was going to spill the beans? Or do you think they killed his dad to give him the motivation to join up? What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Or both? I mean,
it could have been both. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, we didn't get a lot of time with Jason Bourne's dad for us to realize right. if it was just a, you know, just to kill the father, just to kill the
father. I thought it would have been interesting to know how much his father did actually create this program. I mean, how much of it, and when did he stop? I think it would have been interesting for Bourne to know that, because I am my father's creation, and not just in more ways than one, let's put it that way.
I think it's both, you know, it would have been interesting to see kind of – we saw that he created and he had a pitch for this. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be fun to see, like, if they created actual documents online for this. Mm-hmm. But because in some ways you can look at it this way. Like, you know, someone who creates, like, a nuclear reactor or, you know, nuclear fission, and then someone, let's say, like you, would be like, oh, great, we can make weapons out of it. And be like, we can create expensive energy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That would have been fascinating. And the other thing was that, you know, they say that they had been watching him before they actually recruited him, and it was on his dad's watch that he watched them. So did the dad ask them to watch him, or did somebody else do that? Did they have somebody else had their eye on him, or whatever it was? Those things, those questions, because it all comes back to, you know, he always wanted to know who he was and how all this started, and I don't think they really answered those, and not enough for me anyway. I thought they could have spent more time doing that.
Right. I think we spent more time with the father and built up his character, if he was a bigger threat, then could have led on for him to, like, oh, we have to take him out because he's going to ruin the program, or if he was just an innocent guy, if he had more motivation as to the reason why they recruited Jason.
I thought it was a great idea, though. That's what brought him back to learn that and stuff. I thought that was terrific. I just wanted him to play it out farther.
Or is he really dead?
Yes. That's right.
I mean, it was a car explosion, but did we see it?
Well, he saw him dead.
Did we see him in the car actually getting exploded?
Who knows? We'll find out in the sixth one.
Yeah.
And by the way, Matt Damon and Vincent Cassell, it's fun. They've been in Oceans.
Oceans 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, together. Oh, 12 and 13.
12 and 13, thank you.
So, you know.
And in Vegas.
That's right.
In 13.
What did you guys think of Paul Greengrass directing again? He didn't do the first one, but he did.
No.
Two and three.
I really liked 2 and 3, so I was happy to see him direct that. On other podcasts, I've talked about shaky cam and how, you know, sometimes it's great, sometimes it isn't. And every once in a while, you know, like in this one.
You know his reason, though, right?
No, go ahead.
When he started, he couldn't afford tripods.
Right.
So he's just used it ever since.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it cracks me up because, you know, there are two people just standing talking. They're not moving. And the camera's just going, like, trying to stand. It's like, do you have to be that shaky? I mean, if I'm just holding it regularly, he's not going to do this. And sometimes I find it comical because it doesn't really seem to be adding it to anything.
Right.
It seems to be just, like, oh, that's right, I have to do shaky because that's what I'm known for. It's like, no.
Not really. Didn't go off.
I mean, when it's motivated, it's kind of fun. But sometimes it's comical to me. It just takes me out of the movie because I'm laughing, going, you have to be that shaky? Really?
Well, I mean, it, in some sense, you know, it makes it slightly easier to edit because you're always cutting on action anyway.
You don't have to worry as much.
Some movement.
Yeah, you just have to make sure that it matches in some fashion.
Yeah, I mean, the most... I didn't mind it. I've always liked this sort of style in these movies. Mm-hmm. Where the one point it did get weird for me was I was watching... remember the Deep Dream guy is delivering his speech...
Right.
And we're kind of looking up at him, and behind him is himself through what is a camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just seemed like, because we're shooting it this way, I was like, wait, are they matching? It's kind of weird.
It was weird.
But I was like, oh, yeah, they do match, because assuming that the camera that's shooting the projection is actually straight on, but we're getting a cinema camera, Yeah, it was just odd.
It was odd.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the style was very much the same because you watch this, you can immediately tell it's a Bourne film. And also, we mentioned it earlier, but the emotional beats were also the same because there's action in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You have the walking in the middle and more action at the end. But they're like, even when it comes down to the fight scene and sniper scene, like you had a fight scene in an apartment or some kind of hotel complex and whatnot. Yeah. And so we had that, and we had a car, vehicle, motorbike chase. Yep. So you had that. And I'm like, there are things that happen in this film that happened in the previous films. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Yeah, they gave everybody
enough. They repeated a lot of
things. Yeah, sure. I mean, there's always a great chase sequence at the end. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
So, and this one was, and it was fun. I, you know, some people have called it over the top. Yeah, maybe, but it's Vegas. Of course it's going to be over the top. But I still, I was tense. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
I'm surprised they let him film a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I know. My God. It took, what, is it 5 weeks or whatever?
Yeah, five weeks to shoot, and
it's all practical. There's no, I don't think there's any CGI, is there?
Not really. 170 cars wrecked, and they let them only shoot from midnight to 6 a.m.
Yeah,
jeez. Which
is still why it took 6 weeks.
But
5 weeks.
It's interesting because, you know, Vegas is most alive at night.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe everybody's in the casinos. And I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's it. Was surprising.
You know, I mean, I don't. I'm just very surprised because if you're like the Aria, you're like, this is how we're going out to the world. That there's terrorist attacks and people being evacuated.
People on the strip, you know.
But yeah, I thought that was a great little action sequence.
It was fun, and you know, I was critical of Star Trek Beyond the way that was shot because there were, for me, there was too many close-ups, especially in the action sequences. They didn't pull out enough to give you some context. I thought, but Greengrass usually it gives you that. Because, for instance, we talked about the chase scene in Greece where you got to see the overheads or you get to see the screen where the blips are chasing each other. Because I thought some of the overheads they did were great. As that bike is running through the town, I thought those were great. And even in the action sequence at the end when he Bourne is fighting hand to hand. You know, a lot of typical of Bourne movies, they had great close-ups of this that you could really see their faces and all that pain and agony on their faces. But every once in a while, they would cut out just to give you enough of what was going on. And that, to me, was a better mix than I saw in Beyond.
I think the action scenes were so well done. And which, you know, they're known for as well. Yeah. I mean, they got the best editing and sound mixing and all that, and so, and I think the action scenes definitely made it also feel like a Bourne film.
Yeah, and I go back, you know, he has that weird way, and I'm still trying to kind of learn it because he does, as you said, he uses a lot of close-ups, but I can always tell what's going on. Otherwise, I can't. And I remember Captain Phillips, like that ending scene. I won't spoil it too much, but there's so much tension with it, and you know, you're kind of close up, but always shaking, and that, you know, it just drags, and that's what's so great about it in some sense. And I did like at the end that they did have hand-to-hand combat with the asset, because obviously at that point, it's all Jason Bourne has been preparing for.
And they're both wounded. That was nice, too. I mean, both bleeding and everything, so they both could been clipped, and that was nice.
Yeah, he shoves the knife there. Not, but like the finger right in Bourne's and just hear Bourne scream. I'm like, that was good.
It was a close call for him. I was like, ooh, could actually be taken out right now.
And by the way, as we talked about Greece, they did not actually shoot in Greece.
No, yeah.
The Canary Islands, not actual Greece. They couldn't get full permission, and tax prevented that. So there you have it. Let's talk about editing, right? So we've kind of talked about it, but you know, Christopher Rouse, he's the editor on this, and as mentioned earlier, interestingly enough, the writer.
Right.
So he knew exactly.
Yeah,
there's a little bit more vested interest in some sense on this.
Yeah, well, and also when you're writing, you're in some degrees you're editing because you're going, oh, great, I can go from this scene to that scene. There's my match point, and you know. I don't know if that's what he did, but that's what
you would think that he would do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and part of it, like, it's one of those things, like, if you know how to edit it, you know, you can just cut that stuff out. And so rather than waste money, number one.
Exactly.
And two, in some sort of weird selfish way, I wonder if he was like, okay, why don't we just cut this? Because I know I'm going to have to edit it, but it's going to get cut out anyway. Yeah, exactly. So let's just not shoot it, not have to edit it.
Yeah, this is never going to make it. I'm not going to.
So it would have been interesting.
Yeah.
to see which portions of that.
You know, I actually liked the editing, except for, you know, I've already said that the crease was too long. And there were a couple of points in the middle where, you know, it felt like, okay, scenes need to move because I could. This is the first time in any of these movies where I could hear the scoring, and it was driving it, and it was like it was trying to make the scene more interesting or, you know, suspenseful. And I'm going, oh, God. And usually I wouldn't notice that because you wouldn't need it because the scene itself. And I, other than just cutting some out, I don't know what.
I don't know if you're talking about this scene, but I did like basically them coming back from Europe. And they kind of they had a lot of parallel action between Dewey going to Vegas,
her doing that,
him getting the passport and whatnot, and that was a portion that we played out through all these things, but it was very fast, and they had that sort of the music underneath
coming together. Yeah, actually, before that, there was some of that. I said, yeah, you don't need all of that they had. Like, I think they were just trying to build suspense, but there was a portion in the middle where I just started hearing the music going, why are we doing that? Why is this not moving? I think it was more of those walking shots. Just walking.
Yeah. Well, you already know my opinion on the walking shots, so.
I don't know. I like the walking shots.
I did too. I just think that we had too many.
I felt they lasted too long. I mean, in the other films, we had a lot of walking shots and whatnot, but they were very fast-paced, constant momentum. This one is just like, oh my God, he's at one end of the block to the other.
But what about you said was random, because since you mentioned that, I do, and as I'm thinking back about the other movies, he's making the walk, but you see him, he sees the site plan or
he's
whatever.
Calculating.
And that what you were talking about, where he sees something, you can see him thinking, formulating that plan, that didn't happen in these walking scenes. I think that's why it was kind of standing out for me.
Yeah. If nothing else, it would have been interesting to see the other side again. I talked about, for me, it was interesting when they're like, Bourne is like 20 feet away, and yet, you can't shoot him because it's just too high risk.
Yeah.
And so if you're them, I'm like, well, how do I get Bourne? Mm-hmm.
They had a parallel scene with that because, you know, when he was meeting the reporter, Patty Considine, I don't remember the character's name, about Blackbriar. That's when, in this one, he's meeting the guy that helped run or form Treadstone.
Smith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he creates that little
fire alarm
thing. I mean, that's just almost exactly like the train station.
Yeah. Very, very good. John Powell returns to the soundtrack of this. I thought he did good for this. You know what I mean? I wish Dimitri was here for the soundtrack stuff because he just knows music like nobody's business.
I'm horrible at it. So.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, like I hear the music and I'm like, oh, that's cool. But for me, there's very few soundtracks that I'll like actually listen to outside of the movie and examine them. And unfortunately, this is a great soundtrack. I just don't think one that I would listen to.
Yeah. I always noticed it at the end, and especially at the when they were in Greece.
Right.
There was a slow buildup of all the security cameras. They're like, oh, we found Nikki. Now Jason Bourne has to be somewhere in the area. And then there was that slow suspending buildup of music before the action really hit. So that's when I probably noticed it. And then, of course, the end when they drive away and she finds out that he was watching her the whole time.
Mm-hmm. It's cool the way that thing kicks in there, though, don't you think?
It's something cool. Like you expect now at the end of
and,
the
and
film.
They jazzed it up. We were joking about it. It's got that. It's got a little bit of punch to it. I don't know how to explain it, but it's got a couple of zingers in there.
We're not musically literate, so
no. Zings
it's
is
crescendo.
The official.
It's
mezzo forte.
Yeah. But it does. It just kind of. It gets you in the mood. You're like, oh, yeah, something was accomplished. I don't know. That's what it feels like to me.
And he still walks away.
Yep.
Well, that's the cool part about it. Yeah, like, you know, I did something, now I'm off.
Yeah.
You know?
But I don't know if he top Ultimatum when he's jumping off the roof. He hits the water.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a good one.
But
he swims away in that one.
Because Jason Boyd's body was never found.
Ding! Ding!
Well, this wasn't done. This wasn't the ending, but when he gets thrown off the roof with Smith and he's on that water,
that's right.
Boom, he hits his head. That was quite a
That was an amazing feat. That was reminiscent of when he's in I can't remember what town it is, but when he's jumping over the roofs, is it Tangier? and he jumps across the alley and lands through the window of the...
I think that was the second one.
It felt like, oh, we went over the cliff again, and it was like, yeah. That was wild.
One building to the next.
Yeah, exactly.
So good.
He got beat up a lot. I mean, he got messed up.
You know, it's always good to see. You know, it kind of motivates you as an audience member of like, okay, he's not invincible. And, and I think that's too many movies now. Just the characters are so invincible. It's like, okay, what are we watching?
Yeah, walk without a scratch.
Yeah, it's premise. I mean, he gets his legs all messed up. He's walking with a lamp. He's shot. I mean, he's beat up like crazy in that one.
I mean, like, Die Hard, he always gets beat up in that film. I mean, John Wayne is like, he goes through so much shit, but like, he gets beat up, but you can believe that he got beat up. And like, I'm glad that Jason went through, because, you know, even his fight scene, I was like, oh my God, he could actually die right now.
Anything else about the music before we move on to promotion? So this is the first Bourne movie not to feature like the Bourne blank, although it was rumored that it was supposed to be the Bourne Betrayal. I'm glad it's not.
I don't think that's a
Bourne Betrayal. Yeah. Jason Bourne. And for not having seen Matt Damon in that role for a bit, you know, I think it's, to me, I don't know, it is a great title to just pick. It says what it is, you know. And I remember getting excited for this movie. I think they overall marketed it well. I don't think like they did anything out of the box like we've talked about on some other movies, but it just goes to show the strength of the franchise.
Exactly. And I also like the marketing on this, the pictures and the graphics they're using. I mean, it's very, I mean, like you mean Shadow. I mean, it's terrific. It's just his name. It's just his face. That's it. What else do you need?
Yeah. And, you know, and to that, actually, during the whole promotion, something that I found interesting, that the HBO Girls executive producer Tammy Sager, she posted something on Instagram saying, "Hey, New Yorkers, what if we do some peeling and get rid of the guns in the Jason Bourne subway ads? Because, you know, guns always promote violence and whatnot." And Lena Dunham, also part of the girls, she commented, "You know, good idea, let's go." So, and I think that also helped with the promotion. And Matt Damon said it was actually a really good idea to just strip away the guns. So because the film's not promoting violence, even though there's violence in it, it's not about violence. Especially in today's day and age with all this terrorism, unfortunately, going on and on gun control issues. I think it's good that they took that away.
I actually missed those posters. I didn't see one with guns. Go ahead.
I didn't see those posters either. And also Jason Bourne to me is not a gun kind
it's
of
not,
guy.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
He's just... He's a smart agent, you know, who, and he's violent, but it's also smart when he's able to read people and dismantle them in the most efficient way possible. You know, and people projected this to make between 50 and 60 million, almost made 60 million opening weekend. It came in at 59 million. So obviously people are still hungry for this.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
You know, worldwide, $127 against a $120 million budget. So, not too shabby.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're gonna get that sixth.
Yeah,
probably. Although I keep trying to call it the fifth because
you didn't see the fourth.
Yes. You know, and Rotten Tomatoes is the only one that has it at lower.
Metacritic does too.
57. I mean,
Metacritic has it at 50.
Do you think that? I mean, that's
seems low to me. I wouldn't. That's not what I would score it at. But also, what is it? The Cinema Score gives it an A-.
Yeah.
So
that's a good score.
Yeah. Yeah. I think critics aren't. Well, it's mixed with critics. What would you score it if, out of 100?
65.
Yeah, I'd put it somewhere in the 60s.
I'd probably give it more of a 75. But I think it's just because I really like the character and I like that world. I like those kinds of films. I think that's probably why. It's not the, you know, again, it's my least favorite Bourne, but I liked it. I just didn't love it.
Fair enough. Yeah, and as I said, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But as of now, it's supposed to be slated for 2018, the sequel, and a crossover between Jason Bourne and Aaron Cross.
That is exciting to me. I think I really hope that they're against each other in the beginning, because it would be nice to see these guys go head-to-head, and then they can join forces, and then wouldn't that be cool?
It's going to be so badass.
It'll be like Martha all over again.
Be like,
wait,
what?
Your mom's Martha, too?
Oh, good Lord.
You guys know what I'm talking about, if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
BBS.
Well, okay. I wasn't going to spoil it, but.
Okay. Well, too bad I did.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It would just be funny to see what connection brings them together.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts about this movie?
Well, I don't. I'm wondering if they don't even know of each other. Do you think? Well, obviously, Aaron Cross knows of
Bourne,
but I don't know. Does Bourne know of Aaron Cross? I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't think so.
But the thing is, Jason Bourne, because he has his hands on the files and whatnot, he can look up agents who was also part of the program, so he could find out about.
Does he have access to all that stuff? Was destroyed.
Yeah, didn't she destroy them? Or?
Yeah, he did, but I think he has the skills that he could get that back.
Oh. I mean, but assuming that he wants to do that,
so we'll see. I don't know. I don't know
what drives Jason Bourne. Yeah. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Always an interesting character. I really love this franchise. I think it's fantastic, and people still like it. So yeah,
they do. But do you think that they did this franchise a disservice by some people have said they shouldn't have come back for the fourth in the Damon installment?
I don't think they did the disservice because it brought back a character that people obviously loved for three films, and it opened whether this bridge wasn't the greatest, but it opened the door to more better films.
Here's what I would say. They're not doing it. The fact that Matt Damon went on record and said, listen, I don't want to do another Bourne unless it's with Greengrass and it makes sense. We did The Journey and it's done with, but if something finds a way, then we'll do it.
Yeah.
And so they're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. There is passion behind it.
That's true, because if they were going to do it just for the money, they probably would have done it earlier.
And Damon, he's one of the producers on this as well. And so, I do think that, he takes pride in that. He could be doing so many other things.
Yeah.
And, it's a hot property, but they want to do it service.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't fault them for that.
I don't either. I think I like the franchise. I'm glad they did this installment because it keeps going. And I think, it does set up something with Aaron Cross because... we see, Bourne now is so disillusioned that he wasn't before, but he knows that there's nobody there. There's Pam Landy's gone. There's nobody there for me who can help with anything. So that could be an interesting obstacle to overcome when the Cross gets there.
Yeah, I think it set up something bigger in the future that we can all look forward to.
There's always something bigger down the line.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the end music always works, because it's like, okay, we're done with this
chapter's
one.
Over, but there's more going on.
And it's gotta get there. And waiting is the toughest battle. Thank you guys for joining us. As mentioned, you can
2 years. We gotta wait 2 years.
2 years.
Well, at least we don't have to wait.
It's better than 10 years.
You can download our rundown in the description, so that way you can kind of get more of the supplementary stuff that we didn't quite all talk about. In the meantime, thank you guys for joining us. We'll be doing Bad Moms, Suicide Squad, Sausage Party, Nerve in the coming weeks. And in the past, we've done quite a bit of these. We've never covered... This is our first time covering a Bourne movie.
Yep.
But obviously, come 2018, we'll be talking about the new one.
Again.
Yep.
We've talked a lot of Matt Damon and Jeremy Renner movies, so you definitely can check out Past Anatomies of that if you're interested. We did Captain Phillips, so definitely check that out if you like Paul Greengrass. And Alicia Vikander, if you're a fan of hers. We did Ex Machina. We did Man from U.N.C.L.E.
And we also did the Danish Girl.
Yeah, Danish Girl.
So definitely, if that's of interest, check those out. In the meantime, at Serafini TV.
That's right.
Hashtag John Comerford.
That's right.
And thank you, Zach Wilson, for being in the booth on this one. For those of you who are avid fans, you guys, sometimes he joins us. Today, he did not see the movie, so he didn't. But I want to give a shout-out to him nonetheless. Check him out on Sci-Fi Weekly if you're a sci-fi fan. And also for Suicide Squad, we're going to have Roxy Stryer from DC Movie News joining us. That's if you're a fan of Roxy, join us. Only reason to join us for Suicide Squad. We'll see you guys next time on another Anatomy of a Movie. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.